So picking back up on page 582 and 583, we're now talking about carpal tunnel syndrome. And carpal tunnel syndrome is basically inflammation of the carpal tunnel. What goes through the carpal tunnel is something called the median nerve. It's the median in the sense of in between the radius and ulna that basically is responsible for controlling the movements of the of a portion of the thumb as well as the three middle-ish fingers. And the inflammation of that carpal tunnel causes, we'll say, compression on that nerve and causes pain in that wrist area as well as weakness and almost a crippling weakness of the grip strength of the hand. And I haven't really worked with a ton of people with carpal tunnel syndrome, but really, kind of like most inflammatory conditions, can be addressed through, we'll say, in a way, proper posture and, we'll say, flexibility, self-myofascial release of the wrist flexors. But just to go over some basic signs and symptoms of carpal tunnel syndrome, basically you're going to have pain in the wrist, loss of grip strength, maybe numbness and tingling in the palm of the hand or the three middle fingers. And really, you get a lot of atrophy in the grip strength or a loss of strength in that grip. So management, basically, they're gonna say use the conservative management approach from Table 15-3, or you could go to cortisone injections. There's a really good YouTube video about addressing carpal tunnel syndrome you could just literally. Google or search on YouTube how to address carpal tunnel syndrome through exercise or flexibility, and it will show up a three or so good ones. That it's pretty simple as far as the programming goes. You aren't necessarily going to program an entire workout, obviously, around this because it is just the wrist, but adding specific flexibility, self-myofascial release, and basic strengthening exercises to the program can really help address that issue and create less pain and more strength within that wrist area. So, they recommend that regaining strength in the flexibility in the elbow, wrist, and finger flexors and extensors. So, a simple exercise that from one of those videos included just squeezing your grip as hard as you can, and flexing the wrist. And then opening your hand, extending the fingers, and extending the wrist as much as you can, and continuously doing that. If you do 10 reps of that, your wrist and grip and hand fatigues a ton. And even two simple sets of that per day with some flexibility can really help open up that carpal tunnel and reduce the amount of pain felt from that issue. But carpal tunnel, a lot of people that type all day long may feel that. But really, carpal tunnel typically occurs in people that do not exercise at all, or they have exercised their wrist flexors so much that they're starting to feel that sort of issue. But typically does not occur in an exercising population, mainly the sedentary population. So moving over to page 584, they're going to have a whole apply what you know to low back pain. We kind of went over this in the previous chapter. I would have kind of liked the low back pain to be more in this chapter to address it as a musculoskeletal injury typically, as opposed to a special population. But it can be debilitating enough to where it could fall into a severe special population. But low back pain, like they mentioned in the previous chapter, 80% of adults will experience it at some point in their life. 30 to 50 years old is more common for that to occur. And risk factors include things like lifting or rotating under load, static postures like sitting all day long, prolonged static postures, being overweight or obese, stress, poor physical fitness, basically being sedentary, smoking, pregnancy can definitely displace weight or your center of gravity forward, causing pain. In the low back and more fatigue on the low back muscles. Also, things like arthritis, rheumatoid arthritis, and other issues as well. On page 550, they get into a lot more about low back pain, which you already kind of went over in the previous chapter. But causes of low back pain, from what you're going to experience, it's going to be mechanical in nature. So pain that's produced by movement, and or incorrect movement or deviations of we'll say the vertebrae or discs due to poor posture. And you know, a lot of times low back pain is going to come from the muscles of the low back and not necessarily the discs. And obviously, if somebody did have an issue that was diagnosed, such as a slipped disc or a herniated disc or a compressed disc or a bulge in one of the discs, that would be something that you would need to receive doctor's exercise recommendations from. But if they just say, I have low back pain, my back feels tight, and they've never been diagnosed, you can address it through flexibility, self-myofascial release, and a strengthening of the core. So, yeah. And also, they do get into DDD, which is degenerative disc disease, and sciatica. So sciatica you may have heard of before, but it's basically shooting pain down the legs, starting kind of from the low back or hips and going all the way down the legs, typically caused by a pinching of a nerve coming out of the spine due to either a disc herniation or a bulge or injury to a disc. And that pinch basically sends consistent pain signals down that nerve, and the nerve goes all the way typically to the pinky toe, in which can basically be completely debilitating. And some females do experience sciatica during pregnancy, and a lot of sciatica can come from injury, but it can also come from just having, we'll say, posture that is not effective. If you have had sciatica or currently have sciatica, and you have not been diagnosed with any major trauma or injury that has led to a herniated disc or something, it could be because the posture of your hips is incorrect and kind of forcing your low back into a position that's causing this pinching. So stretch the hip flexors, utilizing the kneeling hip flexor stretch, as well as the softball to the iliac, or sorry, the iliopsoas muscle group, or the deep hip flexors in the abdomen. And get those stretch the hamstrings, stretch glutes, work on the rotation of the lumbar spine and thoracic spine, and all of that can lead to decreased low back pain, as well as a stronger core. And when I say stronger core, mainly focus on the transverse abdominis. Draw in maneuver can be great for preventing that. All right, next we're getting to lower extremity injuries. They're going to start with one that you won't hear about as much, greater trochanteric bursitis, or basically it's pain in the proximal IT band. This is like hip inflammation or hip pain inflammation, where the IT band connects to the, femur and hip complex, or the pelvis or iliac crest, you should say. And, it's basically common in long-distance cross-country runners long-distance runners, and really it's just inflammation of the bursa where the hip is, more or less, and can come from trauma, from like contact sports, mainly you'll see this in runners, the long-distance runners, and the signs and symptoms are pretty easy. It's pain in that area, repetitive use, which irritates that area, and walking with a limp, obviously, muscle tightness, and decreased strength. So this is why it is important to cross train if you are a distance runner. Make sure you do some in the gym strength training as well to prevent issues like this. Because doing one thing all the time is definitely going to lead to muscle imbalances, pretty much guaranteed. So, management, use table 15-3, which we kind of talked about before. And then exercise programming, really stretching the IT band, hamstrings, quadriceps, hip flexors are going to be extremely important for this. And then strengthening the gluteus maximus, and then the hip rotators, the rotator cuff of the hip, and then ensuring proper running and walking technique. That's basically going to be the best way to program for this. Guys, a lot of injuries like we've been kind of going through can be addressed through a corrective exercise protocol. What is a corrective exercise protocol? It is foam rolling, self-myofascial release, static stretching, and strengthening underactive muscles. Depending on the issue that's being had, note what muscles are tight, what muscles might be weak, and then address those in that corrective exercise program. The key concept at the bottom of page 585, they're saying that, yeah, for people with this issue, you may benefit from less loading in the hips, so maybe aquatic exercise might be good, and yeah, basically just modify exercises to make sure that there's no pain present. All right, so on this next few pages, we're going to get into a few test questions, which I do want to point out. This chapter doesn't have a lot of test questions, if you haven't noticed. Only about 3 to 5 or so come from this chapter. And well, the first one comes from this apply what you know section. And apply what you know is basically it's going to talk about footwear. So a lot of our clients are going to be runners. A lot of our clients are going to do activities which require appropriate footwear for the sports that they play or for running and different or the activities that they do, I should say. So what should you do? There's basic guidelines that you can offer to assist your clients. And one of them is just making sure that they have a shoe designed for the activities that they perform. Also get fitted, you know, for the right footwear, allow space as far as the width of an index finger and the longest toe from the end of the shoe. So you don't want to have that shoe or the toe too close to the front of the shoe. An index finger, meaning like a 1 centimeter from the edge, is appropriate. And the ball of the foot should match the widest part of the shoe. Shoe shouldn't rub anywhere on the ankle or foot. And yeah, make sure you wear the same socks that are more or less made out of more acrylic polyester as opposed to cotton, as that will prevent blisters better. But the main test question I want you guys to know is this bottom paragraph. And, you know, when should you replace a running shoe or just a shoe in general? And really, it's when the shoe no longer absorbs the pounding, so the cushioning is gone. And if that is true, they are more likely to have an ankle injury. Also, the athletic shoe would lose cushioning after about 3 to 6 months or about 350 to 500 miles of running. That's something that I definitely want you to highlight right there is, you know, when should shoes be replaced? Around that 3 to 6 months or 350 to 500 miles, or if they do choose kilometers, 560 to 800 kilometers of running. But also look at the wear patterns on the shoe. If one side is wearing more than the other, they may not be running effectively. Also, or just the wear on the shoe in general. If the wear if there's no more tread on the shoe, they should definitely replace them, or the tread is low. Also, if the shoe is worn flat, like there's no more tread, like I mentioned, it's definitely time for new shoes. Most people don't replace running shoes enough. You know, if they are runners, make sure they typically will have a shoe that they like and that they've been using for a while. If the wear on the shoe looks good, if they do not have injuries, they can stick with that shoe. But if you notice that the wear on the shoe is unique or like one-sided, that sort of thing, maybe trying a different shoe can help looking at the analysis of their posture and or their running stride can be important to make sure they're running effectively, which will all in turn prevent pain down the road. But next at the bottom of page 586, we're going to be talking about iliotibial band syndrome. And specifically, IT band syndrome is going to be what is called runner's knee. Okay? Runner's knee is going to be, well, I guess IT band syndrome, I guess, sorry, that one's not called runner's knee, but it's very common in runners. Runners are typically really good at running and not as effective at focusing on flexibility, myofascial release. And what that leads to typically is going to be a person that's going to eventually fit into the overtraining category where they're running a lot without focusing on a lot of other types of fitness. And pain in the lateral side of the IT band near the knee occurs. Risks, they say, include things like muscle imbalances, obviously structural abnormalities, high arches or low arches in the foot, not enough flexibility, overtraining or inappropriate footwear. But I have directly worked, one of my first clients ever had this, and it was actually fixed pretty easily. What we did is she kept trying to run further and further and further, causing her to fit into the overtraining category. As opposed to mixing up her running and taking appropriate rest periods and stuff, she just every day or every other day just tried to run further. And eventually she was getting towards the 8 to 10 to 12 mile range, and she all of a sudden started to get bad pain in her IT band. And it was a pretty easy fix. I had to refer to the textbook, and basically foam rolling her IT band, stretching her quads, hip flexors, and hamstrings, and even adductors, as well as adjusting her running program, fixed it within about a month. And she was still able to run through it, or not through the pain, but run while she had this issue, but with a lot less pain, because but her protocol before she ran every day included foam rolling and stretching of all the hip and knee muscle groups. And yeah, but basically this issue, IT band syndrome, is characterized by pain in the lateral side of the knee where the IT band inserts into the femur and fibula. Yeah, pain can be sharp, localized, definitely exacerbated by running or aggravated by running. And yeah, utilize table 15-3 as management for this. And under the key concept, I do want to point out that someone with IT band syndrome should foam roll the IT band, absolutely. And that can be a direct test question. So I want you to highlight that, that last sentence in that key concept is basically that you should focus on regaining flexibility and also strength in the entire lower extremity complex, but specifically also really focus on foam rolling. Teach the client how to foam roll their IT band, meaning utilize this specific picture, figure 15-7, the one where she's foam rolling her IT band, all the way to the knee and all the way back up to the hip. Focus on the areas of a lot of pain, and then work on stretching that whole area. That's how it's going to be fixed. And what is in your scope of practice as a personal trainer? Well, you can definitely teach someone with IT band syndrome how to foam roll. That's for sure. Okay. Yeah, but can you diagnose that somebody has IT band syndrome? No. Can you treat someone with IT band syndrome? No. But you can teach them how to foam roll because that's within your scope of practice. So could be worded a few different ways, but we do want to point that out. And yeah, basically, you do not want to run or do certain exercises that create pain during that activity, and just be aware that you can limit the range of motion to ensure that they do not have pain in that area. So when I say limit the range of motion, it's referring to as opposed to going 90 degrees of flexion with the knee during lunges and squats, they can go to a 45 or half squat range. So flipping over to page 588, we're going to look at PFPS or PFP syndrome, patellofemoral pain syndrome. This is actually runner's knee. And runner's knee is basically going to be pain, anterior knee pain. So it's basically the pain that a runner feels from running too much. Overtraining, overuse is the main issue. Repetitive loading and abnormal stress of the knee joint, so typically caused by a muscle imbalance. Specifically, this is caused by a muscle imbalance of having too tight of quadriceps muscle group. Very common in that. Have worked with many people with this issue, and stretching their quadriceps on a daily basis and before any and all activity literally fixed it in 1 to 2 months, to where they had a ton of pain walking upstairs to zero pain walking upstairs. Did I treat them? Did I diagnose them? Nope, but they had pain in their knee. I figured it was something similar to runner's knee, so we focused on foam rolling and stretching the quadriceps and a really good deep quadricep hip flexor stretch. And it was gone within a month or two. And she had been dealing with that for years of her life. So for her to come to me and within a month or two be completely rid of that pain was one of the best feelings for her and for me as far as helping someone. So that was great too. But biomechanical issues can be a reason, such as a flat foot or a high arch in the foot. Pes planus and pes cavus. Yeah, you don't really need to know the Latin roots of those, but pes meaning foot, and you know, cavus meaning cave, plain meaning flat. Basically creates an abnormal positioning of the foot, and therefore incorrect if movements of the entire kinetic chain, including that knee area. But also, muscle dysfunction, tightness in the quadriceps, and IT band are directly related to patellofemoral pain syndrome. Foam roll and stretch those muscles. Hamstrings also may need to be addressed, as well as the calf complex or the gastroc and soleus. So basically, stretch whenever somebody has pain in the ankle, knee, or hip. I stretch all the major muscle groups of the lower body, including the calves, anterior tibialis as well. So front of the foot, back, or front of the ankle, back of the ankle, or calf, front of the leg, back of the leg, quadriceps, hamstrings, IT band, adductors, gluteus maximus, hip flexors, all of it. If you address that, you will avoid pain more likely in the future in general. Signs and symptoms, pain during running, squatting, going upstairs, stuff like that. And how do you manage it, or how do you manage this sort of issue? Definitely table 5.3, but also you can avoid, basically 15.3 kind of says it all, but they say avoid pain during exercise, proper footwear, physical therapy, just educating the client about it, and then even an ibuprofen might help as well. So another question does come up around PFP syndrome or patellofemoral pain syndrome. So I do want you to know a bit about patellofemoral pain syndrome, but really, how do you address it? So a client comes to you with patellofemoral pain syndrome, and you need to assist them in reducing that pain. Maybe it's diagnosed, maybe it's not diagnosed, but what should you do? Like most muscle imbalances, all you need to do is really foam roll and stretch and restore proper flexibility in the muscles that support the knee. Okay, that's that second sentence there in the key under the key concept on page 589. Really, you need to restore proper flexibility. And how do you do that? You take a foam roller and foam roll all the muscles of the lower body, as well as learn to stretch the hamstrings, stretch the calves, stretch the hip flexors, stretch the quads, stretch the adductors, stretch the glutes, and that will all help it significantly. Also, if you keep looking down in that paragraph, they're going to talk about how open chain exercises may not be recommended. So what is recommended, or what type of exercises are recommended? Closed chain exercises. I want you to highlight that. So it says that these closed chain exercises can be beneficial. What are closed chain exercises of the lower body? Something like a squat or a deadlift or a lunge. Those might be beneficial for someone with this. But mainly restore that flexibility for sure. Okay. Hopefully you highlighted both of those things. Perfect. They give an example of an exercise that can be beneficial for this patellofemoral pain syndrome. Really emphasize strengthening the muscles that might be underactive, like the gluteus maximus. That's what this exercise, a straight leg in a supine position, might do. They're actually just extending their knee, but it looks like she's in a glute bridge position where she's going up, or her hips are going up into the air with pushing off the one foot. Hey, I used to have those shoes. I love those shoes. Anyways, page 589, figure 15-8, highlight those shoes because I used to have them. All right, anyways. So moving over to page 590, we're going to now get into infrapatellar tendonitis. This is known as jumper's knee. What sports may jump a lot? Basketball, volleyball are the main ones. Maybe some track and field sports such as high jump or long jump, things like that. But infrapatellar tendonitis or jumper's knee is pain underneath or in the tendon underneath the kneecap at the bottom of the knee. And that's basically the patellar or infrapatellar tendon. And its insertion into the tibia, the proximal tibia, they call it. But inflammation and basically strain on the tendinous tissue in that area, and basically from poor posture, poor training style, overtraining, and or like a performing a lot of activity on cement as opposed to asphalt or to a track or sport court. That can be like playing basketball on cement is not beneficial because it's not doesn't have any give. It's very rock solid. But signs and symptoms, yep, pain in the distal kneecap. That's about it. And management, table 15-3, which we went over way in the beginning of the chapter, as well as avoiding jumping activities and all activities that aggravate the injury. And then the same from the last one, it makes sure you have proper footwear, send them to physical therapy for management, ibuprofen, and stuff like that. All right, and then programming, specifically addressing the tightness in the quadricep, 100%. That's the main thing. Foam roll and stretch the quadriceps as well as hip flexors. Also, why not, while you're there, stretch the hamstrings, IT band, calves, and adductors, and gluteus maximus even. Getting in a regular habit of foam rolling and stretching those muscles before any lower body activity will prevent these issues as well, so I highly recommend that. Okay. Next, we're getting into shin splints. Shin splints are basically an overuse injury called medial tibial stress syndrome, and it's basically characterized by pain in the shin. and they say there's anterior shin splints and medial tibial stress syndrome, which is posterior shin splints, but really it's periostasis. Which is inflammation of the periosteum or the connective tissue that covers the bone due to basically consistent impact consistent impact of the foot on the ground. And specifically in runners, and they say dancers and military personnel that walk often long distances can get this. And very common in the active population, quite common in track and field, especially around runners, sprinters, distance runners. And really, what should you focus on? Really strengthening the muscles of the lower leg and upper leg, as well as ensuring proper flexibility. Foam rolling the calves, soleus can be important. And then stretching the anterior tibialis. Obviously, if there's direct pain during any of that, you would want to avoid that, but keep that in mind. Signs and symptoms, a dull ache or sharper pain during running, especially during the initial phases of running when you start it. How do you manage it? Lessen the amount of running for sure. And then also just rest. Rest can heal it. And then if it gets super bad, ibuprofen or anti-inflammatories, cortisone, heel pads, certain things like braces. But hopefully it doesn't get that bad and you can address it before. So exercise programming, slowly introduce the client back to their activity, or make sure they foam roll and stretch before, cross-training, introduce other types of training to them besides running, and then stretching of all gastroc, soleus, quadriceps, all of the above for sure. And when they say the key concept at the bottom of page 591, they basically just say a general lower body stretching program should be a part of any program to address any muscle imbalances of the lower body, and especially of the foot and ankle, they say. And so just keep that in mind. I've been kind of emphasizing that, but they directly say that there too. Page 592, we're going to get into ankle sprains. The most common sports-related injury is an ankle sprain, most of the time because on solid ground, people are running and they slightly trip or they roll their ankle. Okay, it's pretty common. Very common in basketball, volleyball, where you may be coming down on top of another foot or something. Soccer, ice skating, and the main type of ankle sprain that is most common is a lateral ankle sprain in which the foot inverts. And the ATFL, or the anterior talofibular ligament, is damaged. This is figure 15-10, that rolling, that's a lateral ankle sprain, and it's pointing specifically to the anterior talofibular ligament. Basically, the foot goes into forced plantar flexion and inversion, and that's how you get that ATFL injured, which is most common. Sometimes it can be the calcaneal fibular ligament, which is the lateral one that you see there in figure 15-10. That's more of a the heel kind of rolls and folds over and inverts. But usually you trip forward, you're walking forward, and that the lateral toes or you know, you kind of plantar flex and roll it that or yeah. Hopefully you know what I mean. When you trip, that pinky toe folds underneath you and kind of inward towards the middle side of the foot. And that kind of tripping motion and putting pressure on that trip causes that sprain to the anterior talofibular ligament, ATFL. Yeah, keep that in mind. Some people might hear a pop. The medial ankle sprain is very uncommon. It's not too often that somebody injures the medial ankle sprain, even though I have had one, but it was because I actually, my foot was forced into external rotation. The ankle doesn't really have much external rotation on its own, but it was forced, basically the big toe was forced laterally, and my knee kind of was stuck in one spot, so it just kind of tweaked it, we'll say, like externally rotated my ankle, which isn't a normal motion of the ankle. And that's how I got a medial ankle sprain. But not very common. A lot of times with medial ankle sprains, you're just going to need to rest them. Signs and symptoms of an ankle sprain, they hear a pop or a tear. Well, yeah, mainly just you'd hear a pop if it's a severe ankle sprain or even a minor one. And immediately tender, can't really put pressure on it. It may swell up very quickly. And yeah, there you go. Grade 1, grade 2, grade 3 sprains. Obviously, when we talk about a sprain, we're talking about the ligaments of the ankle. So grade 3 would be a complete tear. Needs to be addressed via surgery. Grade 1 and 2 can heal on their own. But, you know, ankle sprains can last anywhere from 2 weeks all the way up to, you know, a year long, depending on how bad the tearing or grade of the tear was. So keep that in mind. Exercise programming, like they say, you can exercise as soon as 1 to 2 weeks after, but a grade 1 sprain, but then every degree of sprain worse, it is going to take longer to recover from. But the main goal, and this is really important, with any ankle sprain, you're going to run into someone that's going to lose balance. They're going to have less proprioception, less flexibility, and less strength. So really working to get those back is important. And a lot of balance activities, specifically endurance-based balance activities, balancing for, you know, a minute or more at a time, can be very, very beneficial for this type of population or this injury. And so balance is going to be one of the major types of exercise you're going to focus on with someone that had a recent ankle sprain, as long as it's healed. Also strengthening the muscle of the lower leg, so calf mobilization and strengthening, anterior tibialis strengthening and mobilization can help. Don't put the ankle in the same position that it was injured in, meaning if you had a lateral ankle sprain, do not do any positions that mimic that lateral or that inverting rolling movement, because that's where it's going to hurt the most typically. Okay. They give an example of a karaoke lunge, it looks like, on in the key concept, but basically multi-directional movements can assist the ankle in balancing through different planes of motion, as well as challenge the muscles on all sides of the ankle. So that's good. All right, and then we have our Achilles tendonitis on the bottom of page 593. Achilles tendonitis is really, or it's just pain associated or in the Achilles tendon due to an overuse injury. Or typically Achilles tendonitis comes from too tight of calf muscles. Okay, very common in soccer, track and field, maybe even volleyball, and can completely rupture. Okay, so the tendon can completely tear. Kobe Bryant had an Achilles tendon tear. For those of you that follow football, it was DeAndre Washington. Pretty recently had one. He plays on the Houston Texans. Sorry, just throwing a little fantasy football stuff in there. But Achilles tendon tears and Achilles tendonitis are common in sports where you're running, we'll say, and or jumping. And it's overuse of those without addressing through appropriate myofascial release and stretching the calf muscle group. So moving over to page 594. So what are the factors that are associated with the Achilles tendonitis? High arches in the foot, low arches in the foot, or flat foot, as well as, or those are intrinsic factors. Then you have some extrinsic factors, which are like footwear, muscle weakness, flexibility is an issue, and always want to address flexibility in any program, especially if an injury is present, like I mentioned. That's foam rolling and stretching, corrective exercise protocol. Signs and symptoms: pain 2 to 6 centimeters above the calcaneus, and management, basically you're really focusing on RICE, which is rest, ice, compress, and elevate, and making sure that it's completely healed, meaning it doesn't hurt to walk on, before you begin any activity or exercise programming. And also to prevent an issue like this, foam rolling and stretching the soleus and gastrocnemius, or the calf muscle group, can easily prevent a lot of this. You know, a lot of people are just sprinting, and even professional athletes are working into their games without addressing flexibility first. And specifically, when I say flexibility, yeah, they may stretch their calf, but I'm talking, let's warm up that muscle tissue via foam rolling first, and then stretch that muscle, and then even do some mobilization work in the sense of warming that ankle up thoroughly, like a compression mobilization, banded flossing, stuff like that, which you can learn more about in Becoming a Supple Leopard book, which I had mentioned previously. But yeah, just type in Becoming a Supple Leopard, and you can buy that book on Amazon or something. And then exercise programming, it has to be pain-free. Remember, it's their ankle, it's their Achilles tendon, so any walking is going to hurt it. Unless it doesn't. Once it doesn't, that's when they can begin some work on that. You know, massage, bringing blood flow to that is good, as long as it doesn't hurt and there's no pain associated with it. Full flexibility, full range of motion calf work is a great way to address these sort of issues. Meaning, when you're doing a calf raise, you can do it on flat ground, but do a calf raise in which your toe is on a curb or on an elevated surface, and the heel drops into a full stretch on every single repetition. That really strengthens the Achilles tendon through a full range of motion. And that full range of motion stretching prevents issues like Achilles tendonitis as well as Achilles tears. Okay, keep that in mind. All right, and then figure 15-2 just has some basic stretches for gastroc and soleus. Remember, to stretch the gastroc, the larger calf muscle, you have to have a straight leg. To stretch the soleus, you have to have a bent leg or a bent knee. Okay, I like figure 15-3 to stretch both the soleus and the gastroc because it gets a lot deeper into that muscle group. The one on the elevated step, she's stretching her calf right there. And then we have our final issue that they're going to bring up, which is plantar fasciitis. Plantar fasciitis is really, it's annoying. it can be common in sports like basketball or runners, but a lot of times it happens in people that walk a lot, for sure, as well as a sedentary population. And really, the main factors and risk factors associated with it is a flat arch or a excessive arch in the foot. Pes planus and pes cavus. High arch is the pes cavus. And then also overtraining with those issues brings it out significantly. Also improper footwear, being overweight can also lead to that. And really there, if somebody hurts on the bottom of their foot, specifically around their big toe flexing and extending, that's really going to be the main issue with the plantar fasciitis. And any walking can hurt it, and consistent walking will hurt it. Typically, they would feel it worse in the morning when they first get out of bed. They take that first few steps, and it really hurts. That's going to be an issue. So management, obviously, the same 15-3, ice, anti-inflammatories, add a arch to the shoe or a insert to the shoe that's better for your arch support. And as we move over to page 596, addressing it is important. And the best way, which they do mentioned here, or mentioned here, is in the key concept for addressing this sort of pain is to stand on or step on a baseball or a golf ball or a tennis ball, and then work to improve the foot flexibility, the toe flexibility. So figure 15-14 shows two specific foot stretches or plantar fascia stretches. And but the main one that I've seen the best results from is standing on a golf ball. Or not standing, I'd say sitting down and putting pressure on a golf ball on the bottom of the foot. Hurts a ton, and it will absolutely kill your clients as far as the acute pain, but will release tension in that plantar fascia and lead to less pain overall. Okay, but yeah, it's basically the strengthen the foot's intrinsic muscles they recommend, stretch, and yeah, just don't overuse it. If somebody has a job where it's where they're walking all the time, it would be important for them to have an insert or something that prevents that pain. But yeah, it's, while they're at their desk, as opposed to when they're walking, they can have a tennis ball or a golf ball underneath, and they can just literally be barefoot rolling their plantar fascia out while they are sitting. And that really, really helps to alleviate a lot of the pain. So record keeping, guys. Yeah, just a basic little tip here at the end. Be aware of any previous medical conditions. Always keep the exercise record of how you're addressing the issue that they're having. Note if there's any pain during certain movements so that you don't do those movements again. If something happens like trauma and they fall or something like that, fill out an incident report at the gym, meaning write down everything that you saw and witnessed and have other people sign it. Just to if it does get to legal action, you do have an incident report, kind of like a police report would be, but incident report is the current or the account of what happened. And then also, as far as correspondence, when you're talking about this person's issues, always be aware that the HIPAA Act, H-I-P-A-A Act, prevents you from sharing clients' confidential information without having a written consent from that client. So I want you to highlight HIPAA because it does, we mentioned it in the beginning of this textbook and we'll mention it again, I believe in the next chapter, but yeah, you shouldn't be sharing anyone's information without their consent. Okay. So keep that in mind. And, that's HIPAA. Yeah. Know what HIPAA stands for too. Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. All right, that's going to be about it. But one of the main points to this chapter is I want you to remember, if somebody has pain, if somebody has an injury, avoid things that further hurt that injury. If they have any pain during an exercise in the area that they're concerned about, do not continue to perform that exercise. Change it up. Make sure there's zero pain. 0 out of 10 on the scale is where you need to be with any addressing any of these issues. All right? But yeah, once again, your clients are going to have a whole variety of these sort of issues. And it's important that if you come across an issue that one of your clients has, educate yourself about that issue so that you ensure that you give the client the best service possible and best exercise programming possible to ensure that you know, it's good for your business and good and healthy for them. All right. So complete the PowerPoint lecture if you haven't already. That's in the online course. Complete the assignment associated with this chapter. Also complete or listen to the assignment audio answers and then take the quiz for this chapter. And yeah, once you do all that, keep on keeping on. We're almost done, guys. Only 3 more chapters after this. And I look forward to seeing you in chapter 16. Cheers.